Hi there, I'm Brian Croucher, and this is the Sirens of Audio. Oh, the jokes come thick and fast, I'm telling you. I grew out of it when I was 12, you know, I recognised there were girls on the planet. A diddly D, an actor's life for me. You didn't go to university, you two, did you?
Yeah, I did actually, but that's okay.
They're not trekkers, are they? Brian, shut up. Roll another joint, for God's sake. We never slept together, but...
We won't either.
You know, Travis was upset. He was really, really upset. And I can talk about him now because he's dead. And long may he be dead. I tried to concentrate on the situation and on the relationships of the characters within the situation, do my job, go home and not cut my wrists. We're only just mere... devices, actors, writers of the gods. You're up Ship Creek without a paddle. It's like being a stand-up comedian, but with a load of other stand-up comedians on stage at the same time. He's got a wife with one leg, one arm, and she's Chinese. No, I think I get into a lot of trouble. What a shit performance. Next. Listen, shut up and give me the money.
G'day audiophiles, this is the Sirens of Audio, the show that explores the universe of Doctor Who and Blake Seven. In the audio medium, I'm Dwayne.
I'm Philip. G'day Dwayne, g'day audiophiles.
G'day Philip. We're still in the anniversary season of the Sirens of Audio. The 60th anniversary episodes are coming ever closer in terms of Doctor Who. So we're feeling very excited about that. And this is keeping us occupied while we wait, so we're not... you know, twiddling our thumbs, waiting for these episodes to turn up.
Nothing,
it's keeping us very busy.
We've got
keeping us very busy.
Nothing better to do, have we, Dwayne?
No, not a thing. Not a thing. Thanks for joining in, Philip. Today, of course, is a special one because we're speaking with another cast member of Blake Seven, the original Blake Seven, and that is Brian Croucher, who plays Travis in Series 2 of Blake Seven, and he was also in The Robots of Death, so one of the... four of them, wasn't it? Four actors who had crossed over. Paul Darrow, Jacqueline Pierce,
Michael Keating.
Brian Croucher and Michael Keating. Yeah, so those four actors had played
Pamela Salem.
She wasn't a regular, though.
No, okay. Actually, yeah, yeah. You look at
You can count Brian Blessed, too.
That's because, there's an awful lot. Actually,
Richard Franklin.
There's going to be a lot, actually, if you start going that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So so that's going to be exciting to talk about that. And you've been doing some listening of some of the full cast audios of Blake Seven and the connection with the anniversary theme, because I've got to tie it up in an anniversary theme, Philip, is that in January 2013, so just a little over 10 years ago, we're in the 10th anniversary of full cast audios from Blake Seven from Big Finish. So Warship was released in January 2013. And so... since it's an anniversary, let's just throw it in as an anniversary theme.
Do you remember how you felt when Warship was being released?
I felt pretty excited. It felt like it was a long time coming because a lot of the Blake Seven cast had been in and out of Doctor Who episodes, guest starring all the way through, hadn't they? And Gareth Thomas had been in an episode of Torchwood. He'd been in Storm Warning. So, you know, I think they'd all been in something. Apart from, I don't think Jan Chappell was the only one that has never done a Doctor Who. I think that all the others have. So that's interesting, isn't it? Can you think of any Doctor Who that Jan's done? I don't think she's done any.
Oh, and David Jackson before he died did Sarah Jane Smith.
Yeah, which is close enough for me to be Doctor Who. Mm. So, yeah, interesting stuff. But do you know what we've got to do before we talk about some of the audios that you've been listening to, Philip?
I do, Dwayne, because I asked to do it.
Oh, okay.
I think we need to go down the rabbit hole. So here we are down the rabbit hole.
Excellent. This is weird. I love it.
And I wanted to drag you down this time because you hadn't thought of anything particular. But I thought, well, we can't do an episode without a rabbit hole. People rely on them and they listen to them and they like to argue with us about them. What I wanted to ask you is in terms of your beginnings with Blake Seven, what was your connection with Blake Seven like beforehand? I'm not sure we've even talked particularly about it. So what's your connection with Blake Seven and what was your feeling in terms of the Blake Seven actors starting to come across into Big Finish land?
Well, do you mean the way I got into Blake Seven in the first place?
Yeah, well, do you even like Blake Seven?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, absolutely love it.
How did you first watch it?
Well, it was mainly through the Doctor Who Club of Australia and fanzines like, not fanzine, there was magazine. There was a magazine I used to get called DWB, and that used to talk a lot about this show called Blake Seven. Data Extract always used to talk about this show called Blake Seven. I had no idea what it was, but they always said it was the same production teams as Doctor Who, and it was like a cousin of Doctor Who. So back in those days, we had massive video shops, and I only had a beta player. So remember the days when you had VHS and beta sections in the video shops?
Yes, I do remember those days.
Yeah. So I would always be in the beta section. And fortunately, this video shop that I had when I was interested in Blake Seven had those omnibus editions of some of the early episodes. So the first one I got, obviously, was called The Beginning, which I think the episodes on that were like, it was a shortened episode of episode one. So it was like cut in half.
First four episodes, yeah.
Yeah, but the episode one was like hard. There was not much there at all.
Not much there at all.
So when I actually eventually saw the first episode, it was quite shocking, actually, because of the subject matter of episode one, what they try and frame Blake with. You don't realise that. You just think he's a political adversary of some kind and they're getting him. You don't know the whole picture. But anyway, I think, yeah, it was the first four episodes, wasn't it?
Mm. I was going to say, it was interesting. I would have watched that, I don't know, 20, 30 times, that's omnibus. Mm. And so I actually watched the first episode again recently, about a week or two ago. And my memory was Selena Bett was hardly in it and Michael Keating. And when I watched it again the other way, I think, boy, they have a lot of scenes. Because in the omnibus position, they'd all been cut out by one scene. And suddenly they were huge in it. And I thought, oh, I'd really forgotten how much those two were in it.
So Sally Navette was in the first episode, wasn't she?
Her and Michael Keating were so the only...
Because Michael Keating's the only one that's been in every episode.
Every episode, that's right.
Yeah. And Paul Darrow didn't appear until episode two, did he?
That's right.
Yeah. So that was my first memory. And then I think after that, I think there was a release called Duel, which was like Seek, Locate, Destroy, Duel, and something else.
It was Project Avalon.
It was probably Project Avalon because it was all Travis stories.
Yes, and Project Avalon.
Yeah, so they would have skipped... What was the one set on the ship, the Agatha Christie style one, Mission to Destiny? Yep. They skipped that one, so I didn't see that for a long time. And then they also had another one, which was like the last two episodes of series one and the first episode of series two.
That's right, Aurak Redemption, and I'm missing one as well.
It was, well, Redemption's season two, episode one.
Yeah, Aurak.
Deliverance is the first one. Yeah. And then they also had Aftermath, which was the first three episodes of Series 3. So that was a little bit confusing because I had no idea how it got to Series 3. And I'm thinking, where's Blake? Where's Jenna? But I really enjoyed it. And then I had some friends at the time who had a lot of the Third Doctor episodes of Doctor Who on beta, so I would borrow them and make my own copies of them. So I had like second or third generation copies of all those. And they also had Blake Seven, but it was a lot of season three. So there's only one or two episodes from series three of Blake Seven. Although I think the real diehards of Blake Seven call it A, B, and C, don't they? A, B, C, and D. So the third series was one that I watched a lot, and I really like series three because that I don't know, it's just something about it. I really like Tarrant and Dana.
It's colourful.
Is that what it is?
It's very colourful.
Yeah. So a couple of standouts in there, like Rumours of Death, always stood out, and then Death Watch.
Death Watch. Yeah. Terminal. Death Watch was.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And it was a long time before I got to see any of Series 4. And, I just loved it all. Su Lin, I kind of really like Su Lin. So it's just a shame we've never had any Su Lin on Big Finish.
We have had Ginger's Barber, and I do intend to get her.
Yes, yes.
I'm definitely going to get Ginger's Barber.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because she was most recently was in The Outlaws, wasn't she? Yeah, with Stephen Noonan.
Yeah, but she has done some Blake Sevens the Mutoid. She did the anniversary story, and she was playing the Mutoid that she did from Project Avalon.
Right.
Which excellent. I was amused by.
So as far as how I felt about them coming to Big Finish, I kind of expected it. It was nice to hear those characters again on audio. Obviously, I'm not as huge a diehard fan of the Blake Sevens as I am of Doctor Who, but I did end up buying all the Blake Sevens. So even though there might be some that I still haven't heard yet, particularly the Liberator Chronicles, which are always, just like the Companion Chronicles, they're always fascinating, aren't they? With one or two in the cast, they're always really, really entertaining if you put the time into listening to them. So then we had the box sets towards the end there with John Ainsworth producing them, with Paul Darrow's final ones, with Dana recast, which was interesting and enjoyable. And since then we've had the Worlds of Blake Seven, which had been another twist on the Blake Seven universe, which has been fantastic too. I've loved it all.
Good. That's great. Good to hear.
You're in charge of the rabbit hole. You've got to drive.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that's. I think it's probably time that we move on with Brian. So we should probably get out of the rabbit hole then.
Sounds good. But before we did get to Brian, I just wanted to talk to you briefly about the full cast audios that you've been listening to. Just tell us a bit about those, because it's been ages since I've heard them.
They're going to be my recommendations. I think you better wait.
Oh, all right then.
Is that okay?
I'll shut my mouth and we'll talk about them when we recommend them. So
okay.
What do you want to throw in as a trailer for Brian before we come to him?
Oh, good question. Why don't we throw in the trailer for Caged?
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions. Blake Seven. Caged.
Information. Liberator is now 70,000 spatials from requested coordinates.
It's time we were leaving.
What? Out there?
What's wrong? I thought you'd got a taste for playing the hero.
Only when it's not going to get me killed.
There has to be a way out. There is always a way out.
Logic dictates that sooner or later, luck is going to run out.
If you had just listened to us for once, then we wouldn't even be here.
You would have been dead long ago without me.
Like Gan.
Take that back.
It's over. Your crusade is finished.
Who have you thrown yourself in with this time?
Mr. President, welcome to the cage.
Very impressive it is too, Commander.
When the time comes, when you've finished making an example of him, I want to be the one to execute Blake.
This is a cage for you, Blake, for your crew, and your ship.
The Liberator?
What are they doing to her?
Those are drones.
Crawling over every inch.
You are going to watch as the greatest symbol of your rebellion is ground to pieces before your eyes.
No!
Cut her open!
No!
Subscribers get more at bigfinish.com.
In 1979, the new character and villain to face Blake was Brian Crouch's Travis. We're very lucky to have Brian with us tonight. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, all. All three of you.
Where are you coming to us from?
I'm coming to you from a little village between Dover and Folkestone on the Channel Coast, English Channel Coast. over, looking towards France. So I'm sort of 5 miles out of Folkestone and 5 miles out of Dover.
So on a clear day, can you see France?
On a good day, you can see, not from my village, but from Folkestone, on a good day, you can see France, yes.
Wow, pretty amazing.
The lights of old Calais town.
Great. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where you grew up, firstly?
Well, I'm a born and bred... Bred, but not born. I was born in Guildford in Surrey in the war, in the World War II. Not World War I, no, sorry. World War II. The jokes come thick and fast, I'm telling you. I was born in Guildford, and then after the war, my parents moved into London, first to South London, and then to East London, and that's, I guess, what I'm more famous for with my my approach to life. Some people call it a spiv.
So what part of East London were you in then?
Hackney.
Hackney, right.
Yeah, Hackney, which is up from Bethnal Green, Shoreditch, Hoxton, those sort of areas.
Great.
Yeah.
So growing up, did you always think you were going to be an actor? How did you end up becoming an actor?
No. We used to enjoy coming out of the cinema at the age of 8. I grew out of it when I was 12, you know, I recognised there were girls on the planet. No, but when you were 8, you rushed out of the cinema with your John Wayne on your horse and chased each other around the bomb sites. Yeah. So, in answer to your main question, I never, ever, and to this day, I don't know why I'm an actor, really.
So at what point did you work out you could act? What was your first productions? Were you school productions or was it later in life?
No, I suppose this is, I'm surprised this is not trickled down to you in Australia. I was a bit of a delinquent and I was put under Her Majesty's pleasure, put away for 6 months. And when I came out, I decided that that wasn't the life for me. I didn't want to continue to be an inmate of Her Majesty's prisons. So I went to evening school. From there, long story short, I found my way into a drama school on a stage management course. And then from there, having taken part in classes with the first year students, I thought, I could do this, get a job. So I auditioned for the acting course and was received, got in, and the rest is history. And I was grateful to do the stage management course because when later on in my so-called career, I started directing a bit, and to know what goes on behind the stage as well as on the stage is very it's what you need as a director, really. There's a few people come out of university and they think they can direct, but because they're intellectuals, they know it all. You didn't go to university, you two, did you?
Yeah, I did actually, but that's okay.
I didn't. I know where you're coming from.
Anyway.
So from being stage manager, how did you end up on the stage?
Well, as I said, as a stage manager, you went to the classes of the first year at Lambda. Lambda's well known for Brian Cox, Benedict Cumberbatch, David, the man with the moustache, the detective, David Suchet.
Suchet.
Yeah, which in later on in my career, we were both in Waiting for Godot together, playing Estragon and Vladimir. I played Vladimir and Suchet fell asleep as Estragon. Well, so he does.
And so does half the audience.
The character does. I wasn't being facetious.
No, no, I know. I've seen the work a couple of times. It's very painful.
Yeah. But then, no, I went to... I attended these classes and I thought, well, you know, if this is what it's all about... You know, I said earlier that I never set out to be an actor. I became an actor by default. I tend to go where the next thing leads me and see what happens. And if I don't like it, I walk away.
You must have liked it then.
Absolutely. It fascinated me. There was so much bullshit talked about acting, about the method and all of that. And I thought to myself, I'm going to sort this bullshit out. I'm going to get rid of it all. And I thought, well, stillness, the truth, simplicity, all of those words came to mind. No complication. No. Don't complicate it by trying to be or... No. Just do what the situation asks you of you. And that got me through.
Coming from the East End, and you know, which is traditionally, I guess, the rougher part of London, and you've got a bit of a background too in terms of, as you said, on Her Majesty's Pleasure, did other actors cause you grief, or was it just a level playing field and everyone was happy and welcoming?
Well, they used to patronise me a bit. They used to talk like that. How you doing, Brian? All right? How you going? I said, why are you talking like that? Why are you dressing me like that? I don't say, hello, Lorna. Hello, Lance. How are you? No. You know, a little bit like that, maybe.
But yeah, people can be like that. So, early on, you started off with a stage career. When did you? I know your first movie was in 1968 and film and TV in 69. So, did you do much on stage before you started appearing on television and films?
Yeah, I mean, I did a little bit of repertory work, and then in the 60s, I started. You know, I'm not a great Shakespearean, a tragedian. I don't go with it. I don't lean that way. I'm more of a contemporary actor. And there's a theatre in London called the Royal Court Theatre in Sloane Square in Chelsea, where they, I mean, most famous for John Osborne's Look Back in Anger. That played there. That started a lot of the... contemporary stuff, and you know, look back in anger. It was around about the time of the Lord Chamberlain. Now, the Lord Chamberlain over here, he held sway over art and theatre. So, if you wrote a play and it had the F word or the C word or there was some nudity in it, he struck it out, and so that's why Jimmy Porter never swore. Now, if you know Look Back in Anger, Jimmy would have said, you effing bitch, Alison, why don't you get on with the ironing? But never did, because of the Lord Chamberlain. But after the Lord Chamberlain, I was lucky, Lord Chamberlain finished around about 67, 68. I started there in a play called Saved by Edward Bond. We stoned a baby to death. And the Lord Chamberlain didn't. He wasn't around to stop that one. And of course, after that, there was the nude thing when they all appeared on stage in the
hair,
yeah. So all those productions happened after the Lord Chamberlain was gone, and censorship was abolished. It did open up a lot of. A lot of interesting productions there.
Whose decision was to get rid of the Lord Chamberlain?
Well, I don't know. That It was a Lord Chamberlain was a like a Home Secretary or a Foreign Secretary or the Chancellor of the Exchequer. You know, he was somebody. But I don't know. I just know the fact that he went. Whether there was a political movement within Parliament who thought that it would be a good idea, but that's a good question, mate. Yeah. Mm.
I'll look it up later.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what you're probably most known for from science fiction's concerns the first time is Doctor Who. I know my earliest memory of you, and I remember you still very much from seeing you in Doctor Who, playing on that sand mine. It's one of the most classic shows ever. Do you remember much about playing... It's Borg, wasn't it? Do you remember much about playing Borg in Doctor Who?
I remember, but you see, I was totally unaware till recent times that Robots of Death was one of the top six programs of all time in 60 years. I mean, yep. I've just been to Long Island in New York, and for the 60 years anniversary convention over there, and somebody mentioned it. I did know of it. I mean, Ian, my friend, he told me that Robots of Death was a very special program to all the they're not Trekkies, are they?
No. Whovians.
What?
Whovians.
Whovians. Gallifreyans. Yeah, children of the media. Mm. People who wear funny clothes and turn up in hotels.
So at the time, I mean, it's part of the reason why it is so successful is in terms of the whole look of the program, or, you know, 1920s, the costumes, the sets, all Art Deco. At the time, did it feel like, because I mean, you were wearing some unusual makeup as well, did it feel like you were just dressing up, or I'm just wondering what you remember
the
show?
I didn't. The makeup and the costume, whatever you're wearing, is part of the idea, whether it's a contemporary idea when you're wearing an old working men's clothes, or if you're wearing a suit because you're a gangster. It's the situation within the story that is most prevalent, most obvious to you. There's a department called the makeup department, and they say sit there and they do what they do, and the costume department is not too tight on the crotch, and the boots are size 11 and not size 9.
Over the years, some people have found Tom Baker quite frustrating to work with, but you actually were scripted to have your hands around Tom Baker's neck. What do you recall of that, sir?
Listen, Tom is a lovely man. I think it's a well-known fact that I like to have a drink and a chat. And I used to go into Soho in London when we finished rehearsals or filming, and end up in a pub called the French House with Tom. And, you know, I love his company. He's a valuable eccentric. Not difficult. I like difficult actors, because one of which was another actor who's no longer with us, Tom Bell. And I did a program called Frank Ross's Out with him. And he takes no prisoners, but he didn't take me. I loved it. I love actors that are demanding, because they know what they're doing. When actors are not demanding in any way, shape or form, whether they're crying, whether they're shouting at you, or whether they're demanding of you for money, or whether they are screwing your wife, you know, it's quite, when they do it 101%, I love it. It gives you something to react to.
And do you remember much about working with Louise Jameson or Pamela Salem or some of the other people in the cast?
Well, I do, because one of them was a very close friend of mine, Tarek Yunus, an Asian actor from Pakistan. And I could tell you things about Tarek that I shouldn't really, but no, I won't.
Oh, that's a shame.
Pardon? That's a shame. Yeah.
We want the stories.
No. He years and years ago, he was a great cook, and he'd invite you around to his flat, you know. Come round, Brian, we're having food on Saturday night. Come round. Be there at 8 o'clock. And so it's midnight, 1 o'clock. You say, Tarek, you did promise us food. Brian, shut up. Roll another joint, for God's sake. Come on.
Now, a couple of years later, I guess the part of this, for many of us, your most famous was Travis. How did it come about that you got to... how did you get the role for that? And yeah, just following on from Stephen Greif.
Just going back to somebody that I mentioned, Tom Bell, and a program, Frank Ross Is Out. I was in 5 of the 6 episodes playing Tom's best friend, etc. And it was very, very well received because it was about people who just happened to be criminals, not criminals who were just criminals. They weren't people. They didn't have mums. They didn't use pink toilet paper. None of that. They wore jewelry and shiny suits and drove fast cars. No, we were real people. It was a wonderful series. Anyway, David Maloney had seen Frank Ross Is Out and had seen my performance and was needing somebody to come and fill the part of Travis because dear Stefan was leaving for reasons best known to us. To this day, I don't know why he left. He approached me through my agent. I went to see him and he gave me the part. That was how I managed to get the part of Travis.
Did you need to audition for it, or you just spoke to the director and you had the part?
No. We had a chat like we're chatting now, and he took to me just like you are. You know, we never slept together, but
we won't either.
No, I was offered the part. And as we know, history tells it, I accepted it for whenever, but it only happened to be one season because there's the famous story of Gareth and the RFC.
Yes.
Most probably not.
Yeah. So in terms of the role, I mean, did you bother to go look back at what had happened in the first season? Did you look at Stephen's performance or you just look at the script and went from there?
No, I just, whatever was given, it's like a meal, you know, you had pork chops yesterday and it's liver today, you know. Whatever I was given, I had a wonderful costume. I liked the costume, the black onesie, the tights. Yeah, it was very much Action Man. I just got on with the situations, and whatever the situations brought up, I tried to deal with as an actor. It was mainly chasing Blake around the universe, you know.
Was it hot? The costume hot?
No, it wasn't really. No, it was some. It was okay. I guess I wasn't filming in the temperatures like we've had recently over here, 30 and 40 degrees. Mm. No, it must. I don't know what months of the year we were filming, but no, it wasn't hot. It was very comfortable.
No, I think it was only 8 episodes you appeared in, but the character had a fairly major go at the arc in terms of lots of things to do. In terms of, you know, I think originally you were just chasing Blake, but then, you know, you had the trial series. You were then on the run. You then betrayed the whole universe. It wasn't just a static role. Were there particular scenes or episodes you remember as being things that you particularly liked?
I'll tell you a funny story. I can't remember the 8 episodes. I can remember Trial because that was my episode.
Yeah, that was, you were the lead, totally. That was much more so than even, yeah, the Blake 7 crew were on the side. It was all about you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there was an episode where, and you'll know the episode, I feel sure, because you're devotees, where I was like the Invisible Man, like in bandages. Do you know that episode?
Voices from the Past.
Voices from the Past. There we are. So we shot one or two scenes, and they said, "You're not on now, Brian, for another hour or so. Go and relax somewhere." So I, in one of the other sets, I found a bed. I laid on the bed, and was still the bandages on because you. They do come off later on, but I had to keep them on once they were on. Can't take them off and then put them on again. So there I was laying on the bed. I fell asleep. And half an hour later or something, there were a group of people round laughing. And I thought, what are you all laughing at? And at that time, there was a man, infamous, but he was a man called Jimmy Savile, and he had a program, Jimmy Savile Will Fix It. So you'd say, oh, could I get to meet the man who plays Travis in Blake 7, and, you know, he would fix it for you, or, you know, could I go and meet the Queen back in the palace? He would fix it. Anyway, there were special badges, and somebody had pinned on here, and I had the bandages and all that, Jim will fix it. And that's what they were all laughing at. You're laughing now. Yeah. True story.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Jimmy Savile? Oh, no, we won't talk about that. So, in terms of the end, you were just given the script. I guess you weren't offered to stay on. It was just that because Gareth was leaving, you were going to leave as well?
Well, no, because if you remember what Stephen brought to it and what I took, it was our raison d'etre was to kill Blake.
Yeah.
Because he'd done this to this arm and this to this eye. And, you know, Travis was upset. He was really, really upset. I'm telling you. Once Gareth had decided to go back to the RSC with Trevor Nunn, he was to leave, then there was no reason for me to be there. I mean, I could have thought a good reason, and my bank manager could have thought a good reason for me to be there the next series, but, you know, they were devoid of any imagination to keep Travis on, so Travis had to fall down a hole in the planet.
What was it like coming on board to a series that was already well established, had a good base of good audience base? I assume all the cast by that stage would have known each other quite well. How easy or hard was it to come on board as a newbie?
Well, it's no different from going into when you all meet anyway. Or, well, you know, if you go into a soap, you're well received because they want you to be good to make them good. Nobody's got any antipathy towards you. They welcome you, and you just get on with your work. And that's what actors do all the time. I mean, we meet up, even though none of us have met up before in this TV play. Say, you know, there we are. And we all meet up and we all get on with the job. So I had no problems whatsoever with, and nobody wanted to give me any problems because, you know, I carry, you know, in real life.
So you tend to go...
I'm connected. What? No, sorry.
So I was getting what you're saying. and so has there been a show you've got into and not felt welcomed?
Not felt welcomed. What we're talking about is not just the cast, but everybody else, producers, writers, departments, and it is known because I didn't get on with him. George Spenton Foster, and I can talk about him now because he's dead, and long may he be dead. Sorry?
I'm just laughing.
You can see I didn't really get on with him, no.
Yeah, and he directed a couple of your key episodes too, I guess.
Yes, he did. And he gave me a shit time, and simply because he was a very gay man and I'm a very male. I've got nothing against homosexuals, but we just went like that. Oil and water.
Did you have much to do with Chris Boucher at all? Because he's not long left us.
When somebody mentioned the other day that Chris was... Did he write Robots of Death?
He did.
And he was a showrunner.
And he was the script editor for Blake 7. Yeah.
Yeah. He had something to do with Robots of Death, I think.
Yeah, he wrote it.
He wrote it.
Oh, he wrote it. Yeah. See? Those sort of things, I try to concentrate on the situation and on the relationships of the characters within the situation, do my job, go home, and not cut my wrists.
So in terms of shows after that, you know, you've been in all sorts of all bits of shows, often playing fairly hard characters, either policemen or crooks. You tend to go between the two of those. But then you had a long time on EastEnders. How was your time on EastEnders?
It was okay. I had 2 years, then a new producer came in, New Broom, and you know, I was one of the pieces of dirt that was swept out of the door, really. What can one say? I'm being cynical, really, and now, I would have liked to have stayed on, they decided I didn't bring the character. They wrote it. They wrote the character and brought it to this point, and they couldn't do anything more with it. Well, they kill off people, don't they? So my character wasn't killed off, but was put in the proverbial taxi and sent, first of all, to Saudi or Dubai, I think, and then he's... I haven't heard more than he's now languishing by a swimming pool in South Africa. In South Africa.
Worst places you could be, I guess.
I think so.
Do you recall an audio series that you did with Alan Stevens? It was a Doctor Who Blake 7 crossover called Caldor City.
Yeah, I do.
And
yeah.
You played a character called Cotton, and you were sort of a double act with Trevor Cooper.
Yeah.
What are your memories of that production? You guys had a great rapport in those stories, and they're some of my favourite audio stories based on the Doctor Who / Blake 7 universe. So what are your memories of that production?
Funny, I was talking to Alan just the other day because he'd given us some photographs or something to take to Long Island, and I gave him a call and thanked him, etc., etc. And he said he's going to do some more of, and he wants Trevor and myself to, at some point next year, to go down to Brighton and go in a studio, and he's writing some stuff. But it was very pleasurable. I mean, I enjoyed working with Trevor. It just happened. It's like, you know, falling off a log. And also, it's a great tribute to Alan's writing that, you know, the two of us could actually go click, 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 you know.
2014, you went to Big Finish to do, actually start to bring back Travis to the Big Finish audio range. Do you remember how that happened? Who approached you and what that was, the recording was like? Well,
I knew nothing of Big Finish, and I think the first one, we were all there. The big one, Gareth was there, Paul, Michael, all at different times, Sally, Jan, And of course, Jackie, lovely Jackie, close friend, no longer with us, sadly. She was a character, but you know, just like Tom Baker, she was a character. She's, you know, she brought her fun, her wit, her talent. She brought it to the microphone or she brought it to the camera. But yeah, we did the first one. And then some years later, they approached me and said, look, we've written this one for you. And I said, thank you very much. I'll be with you. And I think I recorded it upstairs here. I recorded it on a microphone in a little area I've got upstairs there. And that was successful. And then the last one, The Clone Masters, I believe, which was great fun because Stephen, bless him, before he passed on, it was only a year or so before that, I think, and he played my clone, and it's quite funny, you know, it's quite funny. He doesn't quite do what I want him to do, but we had fun doing it. Dear Stephen, I remember him well.
So when you regather, because there was a six-part series, this full cast with everyone in it, including yourself. I assume that you were only in for certain days though, because you weren't needed. You know, one recording can do a couple of different shows. What was it like getting back together again, or had you kept up with everyone through conventions to that point?
You know, people, you ask me this question. I mean, I could invent something and say, really, that Paul Darrow was an absolute shit. I hated him. But, you know, being a professional, I didn't let it show. No, actors don't get upset with each other because, like I said earlier, we all want to make each other better than we thought we would be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not asking you to tell dirt on people. I'm just actually trying to.
No, there is no dirt. There is no dirt.
Good. But did you keep? Had you kept up with each other? I mean, this was almost 40 years later. Had you seen each other much? Did you keep up with each other?
Well, when Jan lived down here in Canterbury, just like 15 miles up the road from where I live, and Jackie used to come down for the weekend. Well, Jan now lives back in London, but when Jackie used to come down, I used to go round there and we used to have a tea party, but more a bottle of wine party. And we used to sit in the garden and have a laugh. They were good. And of course, Jan called me the other day. We had a post-mortem about, we talked and Jan was telling me this and that. She's somebody I'm in contact. I'm not in contact. I've bumped into Sally. Dear Michael, not very well at the moment. He can't remember. Well, I can't remember, but he's not very good at remembering stuff at the moment. So, that's all that's around, really. So all of us that's left.
Yeah.
Sad.
So the last Big Finish production you did was, well, actually, a lot of it been written for you, was the Allies and Aliens, no, After the War was the last one, which was sort of Travis leading up to that whole period, up until your death. What's it like going back and recreating a character 40 years after you were first playing him?
I don't know. I mean, what's it like being me at the age of 81, you know, when I don't know how old I was, 31, no, 41. When I did it originally, what year was it? And I'll tell you how old I am.
I think it only came out last year.
No, the original.
Oh, 79. 79 was the original.
79, so 42 away from 79. 70.
Yeah, you're 37.
37, that's right, yeah. So I was 37, but now I'm 81. But I'm still the same person, same Brian, with a little bit more experience and a little bit more knowledge, wisdom, possibly. And therefore, you know, if they write that in, then that's what you play. The words are everything. We're only just mere devices, actors, writers of the gods.
I mean, some actors would want to say that, you know, the part is them and that, you know, they've embodied the part. Others would just say, like, obviously, that you say, in terms of it comes down to the writing. So you just believe if the writing's good, you just play what's on the page and it comes out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got to find a way to justify what's on the page, what's in the scene. And if you can't, then you're up shit creek without a paddle. The best scripts, well, it's like economy in the end. If something's overwritten, then it destroys your performance. Because people get bored with you droning on and on and on, instead of saying, listen, shut up and give me the money.
So what are you still hoping to do?
Well, what I'm still hoping to do is to get a screenplay of my early life produced. So if there's any people with lottery money that want to come my way, it was my introduction to acting, leaving not RADA, but LAMDA, London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art. Lots of alumni that I mentioned earlier, Brian Cox, Martin Shaw, Benedict Cumberbatch, all sorts. It's a screenplay that I've been working on, and it needs a little bit more work, but I'm hoping to get somebody or somewhere interested in it. I have got one or two people, but I can't tell them.
Who would be the ideal actor to play you?
Do you know, this is the question I ask myself. The ideal actor, I couldn't give you a name, but he would have to be... I thought I was in the wrong place. I was born into the East End of London. Well, I wasn't stupid, and I'm not stupid. I think you've gathered that. I went to a grammar school in England, the same 10 years after, the same school as Harold Pinter, the great playwright. So I had a taste of books, of music, of languages, of places. That's what carried me through. I could have been a recidivist and gone back to prison, petty crime and all of that, if I was stupid, but I wasn't. I decided not to go along that path, or to avoid that path, not that I was going too heavily along that path. So he'd have to be somebody within those qualities that finds his way into creativity, because I've written myself, as I say, I've acted, I've directed, both in the theatre and on film. But I couldn't give you a name at this present time.
And why did you decide to do it as a screenplay rather than a book, for instance?
I had conversations. I mean, people have said to me, well, you know, before the 11th hour, you should get some of this down, because you've always got something to say about someone and something and some production, and you've lived quite a checkered sort of life. So I was speaking to somebody at some point, and he said, "Oh, I'll put you in touch with this man. This man will help you." And we talked about writing a book. Then we decided that it would make good television, and we thought we'd make it into a four-part series. And then this gentleman, he had too much work. He said, "Look, Brian, I can't entertain your project, I'm afraid, because I've got work that I've got to hear. Why don't you just write it yourself? Write it yourself." And we decided that we were going to make a screenplay, and we'd found the ending. The ending was that part of my life, 1969-70. It starts, it's over a 10-year period of leaving the East End and finding myself in the West End, as it were. And we had that, and the one bit of advice he gave me, he said, "Don't make it a true story. Make it based on a true story. Change the names, but keep all the characters, and then you can't be taken to court." So that's what I'd quite like to do. As well as do my little bits of, I've got a project to direct on film with a taxi driver friend of mine, which is quite good. It's about deceit, and you don't quite, it's a 20-minute film. I've worked with him twice before. And you can find these on Vimeo and YouTube. One's called Rank, and the other one's called Vodka and Coke. I don't think we've got a title for this one. And also, just two or three weeks ago, I played a grandfather with a grandson who was a little bit wayward in a short film called Digging, which you might find in the next 6 months somewhere. They'll go into festivals. So, you know, I keep my hand in all areas. You know, I look for stuff. I've still got an agent. They still say, "Could you self-tape for this or that?" And, you know, I'm a creative person. That's what I do. I can't lay bricks for the life of me. They go a bit like that.
You've worked in all different sorts of fields, like theatre, TV, radio. I was just looking through your IMDb just before we came on. I saw an interesting trailer for a film that you starred in called Sunday Worship, which was only a few years ago. Yeah. That looked really interesting, actually. I haven't seen it, but it looked really good. What do you remember of that?
Well,
very, I could see you wanted to say funny. Something.
No, but it's very funny you say remember. Remember is the word. Remember the word that you just made. It's about Alzheimer's.
Right.
And I shot it over a weekend. He's now a good friend of mine, with a man called Paul Holbrook, and he's won lots of awards for his short films. And the strange feeling I had making that film was being alone, because I had to involve myself in being lost, because he had Alzheimer's, and he was lost, and I spent a whole weekend not talking to anybody, just in my own thoughts, trying to make this character work. And I won an award at the Chelmsford Short Film Festival for best performance in a short, and it was a tremendously difficult, because it's the same as shooting someone. If all of a sudden I come around and my wife's having sex with somebody, and I get the gun out and I go pop, you know, I can only imagine that, and I can only imagine a man who's lost contact with life with Alzheimer's. So I was having to imagine being completely lost mentally for the whole weekend. It was a very odd experience, but it was very worthwhile. And you know, and people have watched it, and we not just me. I mean, Paul wrote it, Paul directed it, but we took people to tears at the end.
So film is what you like to do more than any other form.
Well, film is what I'm able to do at the moment. I mean, I don't think I could. I mean, I could play a small part on stage. I love the stage. I love the challenge. You know, it's like being a stand-up comedian, but with a load of other stand-up comedians on stage at the same time. No, but it's that. I didn't do stand-up because, well, I think. No, I think I'll get into a lot of trouble.
I think you might.
just a feeling. just a
passing thought. No, but I did, when I was much younger and had the energy, I did enjoy being on stage, because there you were a pioneer. You were left. You had to achieve it. You didn't have a cameraman saying, oh, that went wrong for me, and thinking, oh, thank God, because it didn't go very well for me either. You know, you were on stage, and if you screwed up a line, you just had to go put it there and move on. Otherwise, it all unravels like a ball of wool. So I did enjoy, but these days, you know, I look for the stuff on film. Things come into my head, but just last year I did an interesting film about a couple of lesbian ladies. It's called 175, and I played a neighbor in the village, and it was about the time when civil partnerships were happening, and one of the ladies, and it was going to be passed through Parliament, and it did. It passed with 175 votes to get through. But one of the ladies had cancer and was hoping that she would make it so that they could both get married. Was a very touching film. I think it's a very clever film as well, because it takes in the politics. It takes in sexuality, and it was shot in the countryside, in a little village, just 10 miles from where I live. So yeah, anything that presents itself and I think is okay, I'll have a go at. I'm, you know, why do I want to sit in my chair here all day? It's comfortable.
Well, I'm very excited that you told us that Stevens is thinking about getting you and Trevor back together, because the timing that you two had in those audios was just, it was comic genius, I think it was. So your scenes had me laughing lots through Calder.
It was a very serious. Unwise.
Sorry? Yeah, yeah.
And unwise.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, so am I. I hope I'm around next year.
Oh, you will be. Of course you will be.
Well, so with a career spanning more than 50 years, what do you make of this obsession with a program you did with 8 episodes of that continues so many years later?
I really don't know. It's not my bag, because, I mean, I do enjoy intelligent science fiction. But some of it is kick bollock, and you know, I mean, what did we put on Netflix the other day was the latest Superman, I think, and there was Russell Crowe in some sort of a really stupid outfit, even more stupid than Robots of Death, and firing these guns off, and it was like mafia in space. I thought, no, I want to know about the future. I don't want to know, you know, you've got a gun and you, oh, bang, oh, bang, stow. No.
So what in your career are you most proud of?
I don't know. I'm quite proud of the TV series Frank Ross Is Out. I'm very proud of all the work that I did. I did about 12 productions over the 70s and 80s at the Royal Court Theatre. But the log line for my screenplay is from the Magistrates Court to the Royal Court.
So it sounds to me like you are most proud of the journey that you made rather than any specific production. It's that journey that you made from where you were to where you, where you got to. That's what you're proud of, yeah?
It's a 60-year arc. I mean, I think I was about 22 when I left Lambda, and I'll be 82 after Christmas. So it's a 60-year arc. And, you know, I'm still willing to give it a go.
And well enough to.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, any curveball that anybody wants to throw my way, I'll see if I can catch it.
Well, I'm hoping there's a few more Blake Seven stories from Big Finish coming up. Be great to have some more stuff.
Yeah, well, you just have to wait, you know, like as an actor, you have to wait for them to point the finger at you and say, we want you. You know, I mean, look, I always say the writer, say, for instance, Chris Boucher has an idea. So he goes to a producer called David Maloney and says, look, I've got an idea for this program about a retired astronaut who wants to go back in space. And he says, yeah, well, go away and write it. He commissions him, comes back and he goes, right, that's very good. That's a very good film. Now we've got to find a director. So they find a director. And
George.
What?
George Spenton Foster.
Not George.
No, not George. By George, not George. We'll find, and they get Martin Scorsese, and Martin Scorsese says, look, your astronaut, Travis Croucher, he's got a wife with one leg, one arm, and she's Chinese with no hair. We need a casting director because they know where these Chinese women are. So the Chinese woman comes on, the casting person comes on board. Then the casting person gets in touch with your agent because they remember they've got, your agent's got some Chinese people. And then all of a sudden they say, but that Travis Croucher, you've got a Brian Henry Croucher there. Could we see him for the leading part? And you are then sent along. So from Chris Boucher having that idea and then you playing the part and you being seen first, nobody knows who Chris Boucher is or David Maloney. They don't care. They've seen you and they go, what a shit performance. Next. A diddly D, an actor's life for me.
Listen, Brian, thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely talking with you.
Thank you. And I've been to Australia once, and before I die, maybe I'll come back there again. Who knows?
That would be lovely.
The war, the loss of Star One, everything's a complete shambles.
The Federation has failed. The human race has failed. I'm an outlaw, a traitor.
Why did you leave?
You assume I had a choice. What about you? What do you believe in?
Survival.
From Big Finish Productions, the worlds of Blake Seven, after the war.
You're a shape changer, an alien.
600 ships, all that was left of the Andromeda Collective, carrying gene banks and all the weapons we could salvage. The survival of our race depends on us finding compatible beings in this galaxy.
Human beings.
I'm human, you're human. We're on the same side, the only side that matters now.
Well, my dear, you've had a lucky escape. We almost dismissed your life capsule as space debris.
Jonah? I'm trapped, Callie! Help me! Callie!
And you're a telepath?
Of course. How else could I anticipate your needs?
You're not Aranar. You're human, am I right? Humans don't have telepathy, believe me, I know.
You're the aliens.
She's a shapeshifter from the next door galaxy.
Big Finish, for the love of stories.
She was in pain. I caused that pain, me and my friends on the Liberator. Maybe it doesn't deserve that name.
Well, there you go, Philip. Another Blake 7 cast member ticked off your list.
Yes, we're getting through them. I'm enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a huge Blake 7 fan, as you, I think you're aware. So yeah, it's just such a thrill to be able to talk to these people in person.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Now, you mentioned to me earlier that you've got some recommendations. So
do you want to go first then?
No, I do not want to go first. Well, actually, I do want to go first. But my list says it's your turn.
Okay. So, no surprise to anyone who's been listening to the beginning of the podcast, I am going to recommend the first series of the classic adventures. So, Blake 7 originally started on Big Finish as the Liberator Chronicles. Because of copyright issues, they can't do anything from the fourth series, or Series D, unfortunately, so no Scorpio, no slaves allowed, but they can only do stuff from the first three series. And so for a number of years, they did the Liberator Chronicles. And then for, and I'm pretty sure it's for a Blake 7 anniversary, they did Warship. I'm not quite sure why they did Warship. I forgot why. So they did their first all-cast production, which was Warship, which was a huge success. And they decided then that they'd do it. And of course, the problem with doing Blake 7 on Big Finish is that you already have such a huge cast before you start anywhere else.
Yep.
And so the TV, I mean, you look at the TV show, actually, the TV show only used to tend to have one or two guest casts because you already had to try and maintain such a big cast anyway. And the same issue happens with the audios. And so you do actually have, the first story, Fractures, in the brand new series is only the main cast. And Brian Croucher is kind of there, obviously recorded a different day because he's only there for the first 3 or 4 minutes in an opening scene. But then the rest of the cast, it's just the main cast. So they find ways of having cast members not really required for the full recording days, which is just the way that Big Finish has to budget because of how it works. But after the huge success of first the Liberator Chronicles and then they did Warship as the first full cast production.
Which 10 was years ago.
10 years ago, anniversary. To fill that gap between Star One and Aftermath. They decided to go back and actually do a whole series. Now, the trouble was, where do you fit it? Unfortunately, by this stage, David Jackson had died, passed away, so it had to be after Gann died. But by that stage, of course, they were all involved with looking for Star One. But they have managed to find a gap to put 6 stories in. So the stories are Fractures, Battleground, Drones, Mirror, Cold Fury, and Caged. And it really is one long story. And in fact, a number of them are 2-parters or 3-parters that run straight from one to the other. So, yeah, expect the fact that some of them, so Battleground and Drones, follows on immediately after each other. Once again, slightly different tones. One of the things that Blake 7 did quite well, not as well as Doctor Who, that could change place and time every time. But Blake 7 often tried to change tones, so it wasn't just always Federation stories. It was a whole mix of different bits and pieces, and this manages to do that. Both Fractures and Mirror manages to go a bit strange, a bit unusual.
They've introduced a new character in the series, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, and the highlight of the series is probably the fact they've brought the President in. So throughout Blake 7, you know that there's a President of the Federation, never seen to, referred to occasionally. And they decided to actually cast him. And that's played by
Hugh Fraser.
Hugh Fraser. who's an amazing actor. People will know him from the David Shushond and Perrault stories. He was Captain Watson? Colonel Watson? No, Colonel... Whoever's Perrault's sidekick is. He plays him throughout the whole series. Amazing voice, and he just does Sinister so well. So Hugh Fraser is in a number of the stories as well, and as we know, Brian Croucher, Travis is in a number of them as well. There's some interesting interplay between characters, and as a series of stories that fit into Series 2 or Series B, the six of them really do fit in logically, and there's some ties before and afterwards to make them fit even better. So a brilliant start, and we're very lucky to have them, because you know, I think we've got two series, and unfortunately then we lost Gareth Thomas, and now we've lost more as well. So yeah, very exciting, and I can't recommend that enough, and you can get them on Spotify all for free. So yeah, they're not too expensive to buy from Big Finish and have forever, but you can just go to Spotify as well and just listen to them for nothing. Yep. That's my recommendation.
Well, as for my recommendation, I was going to recommend that you jump over to Spotify and have a look, because all of the Liberator Chronicles that we referred to earlier and all of the full cast audios, you're talking about the first full cast season. The second full cast season is set during Series 3, which is a great one too. So that's there available. But I would recommend it start off with Warship, because that it gives you a good basis. Like, it's set at a different time to those stories that you were talking about a little bit further in the future. But for someone who knows the television series, it's a good place to start. But in addition to that, if we're talking Brian Croucher, I would also recommend The Worlds of Blake Seven, After the War, a fantastic episode there with, because it was a little bit misleading to me personally, because it was called After the War, but as a big Blake Seven fan, you know that Travis dies at the end of Series 2, but he's there on the cover. So
before,
you're thinking,
before the Galactic War even starts, how can this be after the war?
Yeah, yeah. So it was intriguing. It had me intrigued the whole time, and the way they've weaved him in to that story is fantastic. So I can highly recommend that. If you haven't had a taste of The Worlds of Blake Seven, that's a good one to grab hold of. Because in that world, there is also another Travis running around too, in the form of Stephen Greif, which sadly we won't get any more of stories with him in it. But the story surrounding the second Travis and how he came to be is in another box set called The Clone Masters, which is great too.
And both Travises together.
Yes.
Which is fun to listen to and understand and piece together.
Absolutely. Yeah. So fantastic. Great to have Brian Croucher on the show with us and to talk about another one of the things that you love, Philip, very much. And yeah, because when you're happy, I'm happy.
Oh, and I'm happy that you're happy, but that I'm happy too, Dwayne. Thank you.
This sounds like the Happiness Patrol.
And we're all happy. I'm so happy. You're so happy. And we're moving Stephen Sondheim there into the woods. Oh, no, another music reference. Sorry about that.
Now at the time of recording, you're packing your bags, getting ready to go a sailing.
No, I should be packing my bags, getting ready to go a sailing. I haven't even thought about packing my bags yet. I
need to go. You have a fantastic time. Don't get too much sun.
Oh, I hope to get too much sun.
Yeah, spoken as a true Tasmanian here, not getting much vitamin D at all. But yeah, you'll have a lot of fun. You're going to a couple of the islands that I really love too, so looking forward to hearing all about it when you get back.
Sailing to the north, into the South Pacific Islands would be lovely.
Yeah, it's always good out there. As long as the weather's not too... Well, it's always a bit rough just coming out of Sydney for a day or two, and then it calms down.
Hopefully. No hurricanes, juice, that's good. Or cyclones down the side of the world.
All right, thanks once again, and... well, I'll see you when you get back, Philip.
Ahoy there, me hearties, you shall. Thanks, everyone. Bye, right, Dwayne.
Catch you next time.
Bye.
This has been the Sirens of Audio, episode 173, The Travis of Death, with our guest, Brian Croucher, and your hosts, Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny, celebrating 10 years of full cast Blake 7 audio drama at Big Finish. Original theme music composed by Joe Kramer. More about us from sirensofaudio.com. Comment below to let us know what you thought of the episode, or contact us via email at sirensofaudio@gmail.com or any one of our socials. Thanks for listening, audiophiles. We'll hear you next time.